Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Chris George Zuger, here with Alex. My co-host.
Good evening, everyone.
And you have entered the Den of Lore, so please grab yourselves a glass of scotch, pull your chair up to the fire. It is a stormy night in the city, and we're going to learn some cool shit tonight. Courtesy of Daryl and John from Ottawa Paranormal, we have them live in studio here at the Den. Gentlemen, say hello.
Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
Never had this many people here at the show at one time, and I just wanted to say thank you guys for making it all the way out here, and you know, for John especially, going the all of two blocks. Yeah, we're going to be talking about ghosts, the paranormal, demons, the occult, pretty well whatever these guys have on their minds, because when it comes to paranormal research here in Ottawa, they are supposed to be the bee's knees, and I am thankful to be bringing that to you today. So we're going to get things started off pretty well right about now. Let me just pull up the intro graphic. There we are. And gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. Yourselves?
All right, so I guess I would start things off just wondering if you guys had any interesting stories to share with us. Anything that you've seen more recently in the Ottawa or National Capital Region, or what have you guys been up to lately?
The thing with what we do, about 90% of the time we go out, we actually don't find actual activity while we're on site. That's the problem. I mean, these entities, they don't want to, they won't interact with us all the time because they're not there for our amusement. They're not there to act out on cue. So most of the time we have to be lucky in the right place at the right time. We do have one location we've gone to a lot, Wish Hollow, where we've had a lot of personal experiences. Recently, the most crazy thing that's happened is we did have a motion sensor go off on our last case that was upstairs. Nobody around. Freaked everybody in the building out for a little while. But by the end of it, Daryl, as our tech manager, has been able to debunk that as the batteries were gone in it, and it was catching the top of an investigator's head as he was standing on the stairs. So that's just the nature of what we do.
You know, what kind of frequency on contact are you guys getting? Once a month, or how often are people in Ottawa trying to get in touch or finding unusual things of interest that they want investigated?
Generally, I get about 4 or 5 emails a week. Of those, we may have one go to investigation. A lot of times, I'm actually able to debunk them just by speaking to them, find alternate explanations for what's going on. Or once we actually get on site to visit them just for our pre-investigation, we're able to figure out natural causes for what they're experiencing.
Now, how did you two gentlemen get into this, especially you with John? Daryl, you're a last-minute addition to today's show. So, again, thank you very much for coming, by the way, and taking the time to come out here, which is good because, you know, it's going to fill up some extra airtime.
Oh, fantastic.
Get some good extra juicy meat on the stories today.
Glad I can fill your shoes.
So, John, let's start with you. How did you get into, basically paranormal research?
Well, for me, getting into it, it's pretty much been my entire life. My first apparition I saw was when I grew up in my family funeral home at 8 years old. I saw the apparition of my great-grandfather at the foot of the stairs. Down in that area, all we had was the casket showroom and the morgue where we'd keep the bodies before they went to, you know, before they were buried or taken away to their final resting place. But he appeared at the bottom of the stairs. The only ones left were my father, who was in the chapel cleaning, and myself. So my father came back asking, who was I waving at? What's going on? So he went down and he found that there was nobody there. So that was what basically started me on my path. Since then, I've always been curious about it. And at 15, I lived in a house in my hometown of New Brunswick, where over 2,000 people have seen the entity of a man called Mr. Farmer. He was a gentleman who owned the house in the 50s. He died in one of the upstairs bedrooms. But he was always seen by people driving by on the road in the picture window reaching up, like reaching for something out by the river or something. No one knows really know what he was reaching for, but 2,000 people have seen him. So when I saw him, I was asleep on the couch, and I woke up, turned around, and there he was. Like, he looked at me, and then he just disappeared. But since then, that would have been about 95, and since then, I've done pretty much all the research I can, reading books, looking into whatever parapsychology, demonology, anything I can to try and figure out what it was that I saw, what I experienced. And over the time, I've just become fascinated with it, and since then, I've just used what I've learned and all that to try and help other people that are just starting out on this and just they're experiencing these things. They don't know where to turn. They think everyone's going to think they're crazy. So we just want to be there to give these people someone they can talk to that can help them find some answers.
Now, coming up from out east, how did you kind of get the idea to get the Ottawa, the Ottawa Paranormal Research Investigation Team together? Like, how did that go from, seeing an apparition and wanting to learn more about it to let's get some guys who and girls who have basically done the exact same thing, and let's get them all in a room together and let's go find some fucking ghosts. How did that come about?
Well, I started out, I was working basically as a freelance investigator. I would do research on different topics, different areas. I would go out to certain areas on my own and conduct my own private investigations solo. But anytime you're doing this type of research, you need to have at least one witness with you. And I started joining and working with other teams. And I've worked with a few from like down east. I've worked with a few here in Ottawa, a few from Western Quebec, like all over the place. And by the end of it, it always ended with me leaving the team, because every single one of them was just trying to mimic what they do on TV. None of them actually knew the basis for where what you hear comes from. Like when they say, we use the EMF detector for this, they could rattle that off to a T every day, but none of them actually knew where that theory came from. And to me, that just meant they were mimicking. And somewhere that where I was with, they actually went so far as to actually try to mimic completely, right down to what the people on TV were wearing and how they were acting, without questioning what their methods were or where they were coming from. At that point, I got fed up and I said, it's time that I started my own. My wife, Yvette, was the one who finally pushed me, saying, you have all this knowledge. Maybe you should take the lead and you should bring people with you.
So essentially what you're saying, and again, I know that we had talked about this earlier, there's some good stuff on TV as far as TV shows are concerned. It is entertaining, but as somebody who's seen ghosts myself, I'm an experiencer. My family, my mom especially, is an experiencer.
In this politically correct climate, we can call it an experienced survivor.
There is that, yes.
when you see, like, I can understand the need for be able to, to sell ad time. Like, even with the show, we don't have any advertising on the show yet at this point. And even if we do, it'll be at the beginning of the show for like 30 seconds because I don't want to, have breaks in between. But those types of shows are, essentially just to kind of drive ratings to be able to sell ad space, but they never find a fucking ghost. And that always pisses me off. It's like, okay, so now you're like, how do you have 5 seasons at this? Like, seriously, how is somebody so bad at their job that it takes 5 seasons for them to be able to find nothing? Or like, one episode they may have found something. Just because, again, for them, it's not about if they do find something, then all of a sudden their show's over. So at least that's kind of the prevailing theory.
There's painful suspense, and then there's actual investigation, and they're totally different things.
Well,
I'd argue that it'd be a really good thing that you'd have a group of people, because then not only are you adding a witness to the situation, which gives it a bit of legitimacy when you're approaching something that's may or may not be, having a team of people around you, you're not questioning your sanity.
And you're not terrified.
Yeah. Like, why not use a team to do that? If there is something legitimate, then you it's not just your head and not just your paranoias. You're going in with a team. So then you're really looking for something that's legitimate. And it sounds like you guys have the right frame of mind for that.
Well, that's a big part of it. But also, if something does happen, like cold spots are a common occurrence everyone's heard of in the paranormal world. If you do experience a cold spot, it's always good to have a second person there to confirm that it's not just, it's not in your head. Somebody else is experiencing this. Now we have 2 people seeing it, not just one.
Yeah.
So it's always good to have that extra validation, that extra witness with you.
Different grades of evidence, right?
Exactly.
It's an objective presence as well. I mean, one thing about paranormal research is you're out late at night and you become sleep deprived, you're tired. And unlike in the TV shows, it can be an extremely monotonous work. You're sitting in a room by yourself for an hour, or a room with someone else for an hour in the dark at 3 o'clock in the morning. Your head starts to do some funny things. You may see things that aren't there. You may hear things that aren't what they seem to be. And just have a buddy to check up on you and say, well, you know what, that's this or that's that. It's mice in the ducts, or it's a furnace kicking on. And it's not Jack the Ripper's ghost coming up the stairs to eat you, you know.
It's very similar to being a coat check girl or boy at a rave, essentially.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. There is, when you mention that, there is also the security aspect to it. I mean, a lot of places where we go into, they are older places. They are places where, you know, there may not be...
Could be a hole in the floor or something.
Yeah, it could be things like that. If something was to happen to you, or if somebody was to try and, you know, we go in with a lot of expensive equipment. If somebody was to try and, like, steal that from us or anything like that, we'd be, if you're alone, you're kind of at their mercy. So having other people around you adds that security aspect as well.
Now, what kind of people do you currently have on the team? Like, who do you have running the show, and kind of what do they do?
Well, there's myself. I'm the founder, lead investigator. My job is primarily the go-between the client and every aspect of what's going on, and trying to keep the rest of the team in line, making sure that everyone knows their roles, their jobs are getting done, and that all the information getting back to the client is what they need. Because in some situations, we've had new people with us. They weren't sure what to do. They would tell the client something without confirming what it was. Like new psychics would say, I'm picking up on something evil in this house, without telling any of us this. And the clients are starting to freak out. So without even having a chance to look into, is this real, or is this just one of our trainees losing their mind, they're telling the client, and it's just causing more problems. So that would be my job. Daryl, he's our tech manager. What he does is he looks into all the equipment. He watches our equipment for us. He makes sure that everything finds its way back to us, that at the end of the night, we have all the gear we came in with. He does a lot of our review as well. And he also, when we're setting up, he'll be looking at the best possible places to put it and what would be the best item to use.
Yeah, so you've got one person just, you know, focused in on getting the evidence, so to speak.
Well, he oversees that aspect. We all work together as a team, but that is his primary function when he's on site.
I mean, when we go into this stuff, people treat ghost hunting like it's a hard, fast thing. Like, this does that and that does this. Your EMF detector picks up a ghost in the room, and your infrared cameras will see the ghost if it's present that you wouldn't see in normal light. And to be honest, it's best guess theory. Everything that we do with equipment is theory. And I think on a scientific level, like, what are we looking at here? What kind of aspects of reality are we kind of involved with? Would this piece of equipment work better than that piece of equipment? Do we think that it'll work better? What have other people had success with? What have they not had success with? And kind of think, where are we? What's the path forward with this very unusual technological field here? It's interesting, but I kind of stay away from the more intuitive side of things with the psychics and the religious aspects to
it. The equipment's going to ground you into walk in the door with multiple paradigms at the same time. So I mean, we can look at
exactly
it from this angle or that angle.
I'll take the technological tools. The psychics can have the psychic side of things. At the end of the day, we put it all together, build a package in a case, and Bob's your uncle.
Now, Daryl, how did you get into this? And again, I know I was trying to get the dog out of the room, so I do apologize if I missed that part. And if you did, please somebody speak up and say, did I miss that question?
What question?
How did you get into this?
Oh, how did I get into this? It wasn't anything as interesting as John. No funeral homes and dead farmers.
Some of us are born into it.
I was just it was a lifelong curiosity. I grew up in a house where you always feel like someone's breathing down your neck. Anyway, even people who aren't scared of the dark would come to my house for sleepovers when I was a kid, and they'd be up half the night because they'd feel like someone was staring at them. And as well as that, I just have a curious mind and just a natural interest in that field. Like the bigger questions, what happens after you die? Those sorts of things. And it kind of progressed into reading books on the paranormal. Then when the TV shows came out, like I think it started back in the 2000s with Most Haunted over in England, started watching those and getting an interest in that this stuff's going on. But I didn't think real people actually did this until a few years ago. I hooked up with a Maritime Paranormal out in Halifax. Shout out to them if they're listening. Got out with a few investigations with them, which was absolutely incredible. And when I moved out to Ottawa, started looking into what was going on here and hooked up with John.
Yeah, it's always exciting to sort of go out there and, you know, if that is your fear, to look it right in the eye and be like, okay, you know, I'm not going to conceptualize this forever. Let's go out and try to have a look. There's a... Obviously, you're entering into the frame of mind. Okay, if there is ghosts, that's one particular paradigm, and you can sort of load up certain religious proclivities or however you've been raised into thinking about the world. There's sort of an interesting theosophical debate that I had heard, which sort of the logic chain sort of runs like, if you presuppose that there are ghosts, then you presuppose that there's life after death. And if you presuppose there's life after death, then there are souls. And if there are souls, then there's probably evolution of the soul. And if you give infinite time to an evolution of the soul because it's not mortal anymore, then there's probably a God and an eternal soul. And you'd say, well, if there's a God, then is that God just? And would a just God allow ghosts to exist? Because you'd say, well, any mother that would die prematurely or die during childbirth or something would want to stick around to wait to raise and see her children. And a just God would never allow that. So can the ego live in... So if there is a soul, does the ego of that soul live on after death or not?
You've read Plato's Republic.
That's actually a theosophical argument. Or
okay, because there's something very similar in Plato's Republic.
So, yeah, so you're trying to logic through superstition and just sort of come out to, okay, so you know, I'm accepting certain presuppositions about the universe.
One approach. You could also say if we live in a multidimensional universe, this could be points of crossover.
Yep.
Where an entity that is existing in a parallel universe that could be almost exactly the same as ours is having shadows kind of transposed onto our living reality, and a ghost is nothing more than that shadow. It's kind of a glamourless, cold, dark, empty, horrible frame of reference for it, but I personally buy more into what you're describing, but the possibilities when you look at it are so endless, because at the end of the day, if you don't have a theological approach or a solid other approach, you really don't have anything. Best guess.
How are you going to frame it? Yeah.
You see, when you get phrases like what you just explained there, you have to look at where it's coming from and the background of the people that are saying it, right? Because some would say, you know, is it just for that? Others would look at it and say, how is it not just? You know, like when he says, you know, would a mother not see her child grow up? Some of the, I don't know how to put this first, because I'm not going to sound like terrible, but for some people, what they need is what happened in their life. You know, when somebody's mother dies, it may lead them to become a lawyer, something better that may not have happened, where they might have just been, you know, another millennial sitting at home in their parents' basements playing video games till they're 30.
Hey.
But you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Everything happens for a reason. So is it just? It doesn't have to be. It is something that happened, but there's a reason for it. And the question is not up to us to figure out. We may not see it as just, but once it's all said and done, we may look back on it and see then.
Yeah. So it's sort of like, you know, is there something there? And if there is there something we can do about it?
Now, there is also the aspect of, again, touching on what you said, John, with regards to multi dimensions. The idea of conscious. Oh no, sorry, it was Daryl. the idea that, you know, what is a soul? You know, is it just is what our consciousness is? Is it just a bunch of firing neurons, and then when we're dead, we're dead? But if that's the case, how is it we have these apparitions that are showing up on, you know, on tape, on EM readers, you know, cold spots, visually, and being able to actually interact within this world? How is it we don't know that what the soul is just kind of like the core of what we are as beings, and we as individuals just, you know, manifest ourselves corporeally into a body, and we just kind of exist through the, you know, the 90 or so years, or 50 if you smoke a lot. And then, you know, you just kind of die, and you've got the option to kind of say, like, oh, I'm just going to stick around for a bit, you know, because I like the flowers and the cheesecake. Or, you know, I'm gonna pass on and go on to that next dimension. Like, how is that type of research into how consciousness works with people worked into your work, as far as understanding what your subject matter is?
Can I touch that one?
Go for it.
Well, that's a interesting question. I mean, I look at it from two perspectives. I'm a devout Christian, so my personal belief structure is that we have a immortal soul that carries on after death. But I'm also a skeptic, if you can imagine trying to reconcile those two concepts. I'm not an atheist, but I'm definitely a skeptic, and I have a scientific approach to these things. So the first question is, once you remove the theological aspect to it, is figuring what are these things? What are they from a real point of view? Is it the soul of a person? Or is it maybe a crossover of some kind of interdimensional sort, where all you're seeing is a shadow? Or is it like a recording from something from the past? Or if you're interacting with it, is it a type of life form or living thing that we simply don't have any access to in our regular frame of material existence? I mean, there's so many different theories now coming on from the scientific side of the house, saying string theory and all these other bizarre things, where we're talking about multiverses and multidimensional frames that make a lot of these things possible. But to answer more specifically your question, when we're looking at consciousness, we're looking more and more into the frame that, or the idea that consciousness is the driving force behind who we are. It's not a product of our physical mind, and I buy into that. So when I'm looking at equipment, and when we're looking at how we perform an investigation, it's kind of from that full spectrum point of view, instead of just saying, is it a ghost? If it's a ghost, who is it? It's more like, what's going on, and what is it? And then if it's a what, then can it be a who? And if it's a who, what's its purpose?
Yeah.
And you take it from science, you take it to theology, and say, is it a demon? Is it a non-human entity? Is it something good? Is it something evil? Is it something indifferent?
Or is it Uncle Bob?
There's a myriad of cultures out there, and they're all going to have their own sort of cultural motifs on what does happen after you die. You know, there's the Egyptian Book of the Dead. There's the Tibetan Book of the Dead. There's the Christian. There's lots of different perspectives on what could be happening. And if we do live in a multiverse type scenario, well, you are part of that multiverse scenario right now. Like, just, you know, you could take maybe a weird example, but if you brought a radio back in time with you, you could have somebody swallow a radio back in time. And so, like, you know, it's a bit of a mind-bending exercise, but, you know, right now there's like 10,000 different kinds of radio waves and different energy signals that are passing through your body that you're completely not aware of. And those are all legitimate things. So it's just, what's bandwidth, or what's the format for whatever that life energy signal is that, you know, we're sort of looking for the ghost in the machine. And is it out there when I'm in a haunted house, or, you know, the ghost in the machine, can I find it right here looking at myself?
Well, one thing that in parapsychology they look at, and there is an organization out there, and this is a standing offer to anyone that can do this. If you can scientifically prove repeatable evidence of the paranormal, they will give you $1 million. However, most parapsychologists have even said this is a prize that will never be won, because in order to win it, you have to prove consciousness. Now, how do you do that? That's the question.
Yeah.
It's one of those where, you know, there is no real way we can prove this. We can have all these theories, you know, different beliefs, the multiverse, all kinds of things like that. But there is, honestly, no real way that we have right now to actually prove any of them. That's why that's the biggest problem of what we do, and why most people would call it a pseudoscience, because it is all theoretical. And like parapsychology started in the 1850s.
Yeah.
You got to think, that's over 150 years, and still they can't prove the existence of it.
You can on YouTube.
The human mind.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
But. YouTube has answers for everything.
It's a claim for everything, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Wikipedia.
Yeah, Wikipedia is a good one, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a constant uphill battle for legitimacy or evidence, but your frame of reference, and there's sort of like that Faustian conception of, you know, if there are other spirits or something like that, well, they're getting inside your head. It's not a physical incarnation of something. It's something that's going to interact with your mind. Mm-hmm. Like your brain is a tuning fork as opposed to like a disincarnate spirit. So how would that actually interact with you? Is it going to physically incarnate? Well, probably not. Would if you give legitimacy to the whole worldview there, you'd say, well, you know, how is it going to interact with you? So there's a sort of this weird Faustian conception where he would speak to an entity in his own mind. It's not like a physical apparition or something you could go chase in a house. It's sort of a way swing out into a different field of maybe looking at that same subject. But
some may call that demonic possession.
Yeah,
well, that would be a whole different ball game at that point. No, that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah,
I think what he's trying to get to is, you know, when you go into a certain place and people say like it's haunted, like just in Ottawa alone, we use the Bytown Museum as a good example.
Yeah.
We've never investigated. We're hoping to, if they're listening. We've been there on a few tours. We've heard the stories, but there's always the story of the soldier in the back walking along the back hallway, right? There's all the noises people have heard in there. Now, I think what you're trying to say is what makes that location so much different that it's haunted, but others wouldn't be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of theories on that. One of them is the fact that there's running water nearby. That running water creates kinetic energy. That energy allows for the spirits to actually have something to draw from. On top of the fact, there's another theory called stone tape, which is it's the stone tape theory. Basically, older buildings, we see this a lot in Europe, London, England. a lot of places like that where they're old, you know, centuries old buildings, castles, things like that,
yeah.
Where the very stones they're built from over time have absorbed this energy, the feelings, the emotions of people, all this stuff is there and it just keeps replaying. Most people will call it like a residual haunt, but we see a lot of intelligent ones also associated with these places. Now, is it something that just the energy there is so, like the psychic energy there is so high because of these things? We don't know. There's a lot of theories abound about it. But.
Some modern physicists talk about the idea that you may be able to store different kinds of energies and stuff inside of a crystal. So if there was some sort of crystal lattice deep in the how the stone is made.
That's very similar to the stone tape theory, because one thing we do notice a lot is when we do our investigations, we actually look at the geological area around where we're going. And one thing we've found a lot, which is something that's been found by a lot of others, is that areas that are rich in limestone and quartz, which quartz is a crystal, areas rich in those in the soil content, they seem to be more active for some reason. So that goes along with, as you said, some of these believers in crystals and the theory of them. Why they actually are so much more active, nobody knows.
It could just
be something there is affecting the people, and people are it's bothering them.
Woo-woo crystal theory, and then there's some actual. There's like the scientific.
Basis
for crystal energy or whatever.
But all these theories come from somewhere, right? They all boil down back to the beginning. It goes to like I was saying earlier when you see the TV shows and they talk about using the EMF detector. And they say, oh, some people are saying, you know, I have a blip on my EMF detector. It means there's a ghost. No, it doesn't. It means you have an environmental anomaly in the building.
Yeah, there's background radiation. So if you had a Geiger meter and you were walking around town, you'd see it going off all over the place. Like there's background Geiger.
You will see that. But with the EMF
everywhere meter, in the world is a little bit radioactive. It's just.
But with the EMF meter, there is actually scientific fact behind it from Dr. Michael Persinger. He's actually a Canadian neurologist from Sudbury, Ontario, out of Laurentian University at the time. And he built what was called, it's been dubbed the God Helmet. And what it was is participants would wear the helmet and they were putting different levels of magnetic field through it to see what would happen. And they found that some people were more sensitive to these fields. And because of that, it would cause hallucinations, nausea, all kinds of things like that. Now, in some areas where ghosts are present, people find high EMF. But on a lot of places, they're like, oh my gosh, we found high EMF. That means there's a ghost here. That just means there's high EMF there. That could be what's causing the people to hallucinate or have these experiences. It doesn't mean that there's an actual ghost.
Well, how much EMF would you actually need to be able to do that? Because going back to the stone tape theory, if you look back to ancient Egypt, and yes, I'm going to be bringing up ancient history here for a moment, pre-dynastic and old kingdom Egypt actually made a lot of their receptacles, and they worked a lot with quartz, and they worked a lot with limestone. And at least assuming that they also had some work with healing through sound. So considering that Egypt was considered one of the most spiritually advanced cultures, having been around for like 5,000+ years, mm-hmm. maybe more, depending on who you talk to, John Anthony West, how would that tie into, speaking about going back to the beginning, how would that tie into what we're doing now as far as the type of work that's concerned
modern
with
parallel?
Like, you know, if you're saying that these types of areas that are active now have a lot of limestone and quartz in them, maybe this is something that they've known about, or at least our ancestors have known about for thousands of years.
Exactly. I mean, there is that possibility that it is real. That's the thing. But how do we prove that? Like, how do we prove something that we can't create on command, right? I mean, I couldn't go out and get, like, 30 million pounds of quartz, stack it somewhere, and then all of a sudden a ghost appears, right?
Here's another sort of weird angle on the same thing, but in terms of the physics and time. So if you're near a very large mass, you can dilate or change the perspective of time a little bit. If you had like a giant pyramid, you're standing next to the pyramid. They talk about like relativistic physics and how mass affects the relativity of time. I'm not a physicist, let me just preface that. But if you're near a very, very massive structure, it may actually influence time dilation a little bit.
Can I touch that one?
Go for it.
When astronauts go to the ISS, the time differential between them and personnel on the ground, and we're talking the Earth, is pretty big, pretty heavy thing, is measured in milliseconds. We're talking something at the scale of a pyramid compared to something the scale of the Earth. I don't think the time dilation or compression against an object of that size would even be relative.
I agree with you. Just sort of a wild shot at the speculating on.
And there's nothing wrong with speculation. I mean, that's how theories get developed. Is, well, can this be a possibility? Then you go examine it.
We're not building a pyramid on the next
case. No, we're not building a pyramid.
Could the mass be a factor?
You know, we'll call the neighborhood, maybe. We'll get some beer, we'll build
stones.
A pyramid.
We'll
build
a big
pyramid. Well, when you look at ancient Egypt and stuff, you could look at it one perspective saying, well, limestone is really easy to quarry. Well, you build stuff out of stuff that's easy to chop up. You look into granite, quartz, crystals, these kinds of things, you have to look at it from every angle. They could just be developing their religious beliefs along the lines of what's available and what they see and what they're usually some sort of psychoactive drug dictates.
Yeah. So I think the underlying question here is how do you make it repeatable?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what we're searching for here. You take drugs, you go to the haunted house. The haunted house has to be made of stone and near a waterway. How do you compound these factors to try to find something?
You keep eating the moldy repeatable. Rye bread.
Well, basically, the way we look at it is, you know, you have to be constantly visiting these places. A lot of times, we'll go to investigations. We'll go there 2-3 times if we have to. Sometimes more. Like, the one location we've been to in Lanark County, Witch Hollow, we've been there 6 times. We continuously have personal experiences, though we're yet to catch anything on film or audio. They don't like, I guess they don't like to be photographed, but every time we're there, we've had personal experiences, and it is a high limestone area. We know that. You know, why is it? We don't know. We've gone in and we've tried, you know, some people might say that in ancient Egypt, because it was so spiritual, these people believed things were happening to them. You know, a true skeptic, that's what they would say.
Yeah.
No. But when we go out to these other places, like I said, a Witch Hollow, we don't even tell people what the ground is. We don't tell them anything like that. But still, six of us heard a disembodied sigh there one day. All six of us standing in one circle. Everyone was visible. We all heard it. It wasn't from any of us. We had another time we were there. We had rocks and branches on the side thrown at us. Myself and another one of our investigators, we saw a shadow entity on the other side of a building, looking through the slats in a log.
Shit, I gotta go out there with you guys. This sounds like fun. Like,
the evidence is
out there.
Most
people say
the evidence is there. It just requires a tremendous amount of patience and
repeatable courage.
It can almost never be repeated. That's the hard part. You see something once, you experience something once, and you never experience it again. And you go and tell people, and they're like, "Yeah, stop drinking."
Lots of GoPro cameras.
Exactly. But back to the EMF thing that you were discussing, I had a really interesting experience with an EMF detector on former investigation with Maritime Paranormal. And this is where backwards logic, a logic trap, can get a lot of investigators, because like John was saying, a lot of investigators will believe that since I've got something on an EMF detector, it means that there's something there, that there's a ghost there. Well, we're in this room in an old, very old structure. And all of a sudden, in one corner of the room, this EMF detector goes off the chart. Way up. There's no metal. There's no electricity. There's no wiring, no piping, no water running.
Only the cosmic rays.
No high-tension wires, no sunspots, from what I understood. Nothing that would be your standard culprits for creating a high electromagnetic field, which is all it's detecting. There's electricity or some kind of radiation being emitted somewhere. And we're scratching our heads and we're starting to get kind of excited because we're thinking, oh my Lord, look at that. There's something cool here. But as we kind of broke this thing down and walked through the process of elimination, what we figured out was that there was a bucket of coal in the corner. And coal is radioactive to a certain extent. But this particular coal had enough radioactive isotopes in it to send this EMF detector crazy. So we'd put the EMF down to the coal, it would go berserk. We'd distance ourselves away. It's like, that's a pretty cool ghost hiding in the coal.
Did you guys, do you ever bring like radon gas detectors, which is sort of a low-level radiation gas that can be emitted out of soils and things?
No, we don't have access to those type of things.
The catalysts are like $40-$50 at the hardware stores nowadays.
Well, yeah. I'll have to look into one of those.
Bring one of those in your kit, maybe.
Of course, I don't think I want
one more thing to eliminate.
I
don't imagine you're running around with a Geiger scale. It's sort of a different.
We used to do that back in the 80s. No, never again.
Yeah. Now, what do you guys use as far as gear is concerned? And, you know, People have watched Ghost Hunters and all those other shows that are on TV, but nobody really knows exactly what it is. What goes into it as far as gear? I'm a gearhead. I love just electronics and stuff.
Ghostbusters?
Okay, here's... Okay, you know, completely on a tangent. And I'm going to put you in the hot seat on this one.
All right, you do that.
Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Okay, so I got one yes, one no.
No, I've not seen it.
It actually is good. Check it out.
Is it?
Yeah.
What? Heathen. No way. No way.
Don't get me wrong. I don't agree with how they did it. I do think they should have done it as a 30 years after the original, not a whole completely the original never happened.
That was a new timeline?
Oh, yeah. They just rebooted the whole thing. Like the original's never even... If they would have done it where it was, you know, this is 30 years after the original Ghostbusters happened, then I would see it. But the movie itself as a whole, I thought was decent. It was funny. It had its moments, and it was good. Was it anywhere near what?
Did it have Stay Puft?
At least in the original. No. at least in the original, a lot of what they were using was parapsychological testing, parapsychological theory. This one, they kind of just, it was in the first one, we're going to play with it and have fun.
You know, you go, so it's kind of like going from Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings to Lord of the Rings directed by Michael Bay.
For lack of a better word,
yeah.
That's
a decent analogy, I think.
Yeah, thank you.
I can see that.
And again, I digress. Go, and Daryl, going back to the gear, if you'd like to be able to kind of step through, because at some point I'd like to be able to hear the entire process you guys go through as far as the research from beginning to end, whether it's, yep, there's a ghost here, holy shit, to, it's nothing. But as far as like the bare bones gear, what is involved and what does it do?
Okay. Well, there's a basic gear that most people have. It's pretty much your bare bones ghost hunter kit. An infrared camera, and I'll get to the reasons why we use infrared. And it's not because of the TV shows use infrared and it's spooky and cool. I mean, that always has an aspect to it, but that's not the reason. A tape recorder. Well, by tape recorder, I mean digital audio recorders these days. That seems to be the main fare. And there's reasons for that. Electronic voice phenomenon and those sorts of things. We have... And that's the main bare bones of it. Other than that, we have infrared motion detectors, trail cameras. What else do we have?
Is there a particular quality spec to the audio recorders you look
as
for?
As high quality as you can get. What you're looking for, I got some pretty good stuff.
Yes or no on the high quality thing. I mean, I've gotten some good EVPs just using a regular Sony $50 digital recorder straight out of Canada Computer or places like that. You can still... Definitely, if you don't, like, you need an auto recorder, and it needs to be something decent. Something that's not going to cut white noise out. Something that's not going to have a lot of interference from it. Something with a half-decent microphone, or that you can plug a microphone into.
And you want the white noise. It's important.
Yeah, you want it to be able to do that, because anything that cuts out white noise will actually cut out the hertz range of an EVP.
Yeah, they're pretty low.
Which is the exact opposite of what I try and do.
Worth mentioning.
Well, yeah, no. Well, again, that's also like the exact opposite thing I do on this show. Yeah. I've got a noise gate on our live streamer, which is supposed to be cutting out a lot of this fan that we have here, trying to cool down the studio with four people in it. But you know, a lot of the DAWs nowadays, you know, or digital recorders or digital software, they'll have noise reduction built in, and a lot of the times it's automatic,
and you have to turn it off.
So.
Yeah, that's why we have to keep an eye out for the ones that we can turn it off on. Or sometimes I find the older models that don't have it actually are the better way to go.
Yeah. Especially if it's analog.
So don't try and do any...
Analog has its own issues, but...
Yeah. No Zozo the YouTube demon here. You're not going to get an interview with him with your noise thing cut off.
He's the Ouija one.
Oh, he's the Ouija one?
He's Ouija.
Oh, yeah, he's all over YouTube.
Next time.
He's famous. So video cameras. Video cameras are a very interesting gadget these days because Sony stopped making Night Shot years ago because you can see through clothing with it. You could.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's why they stopped making Night Shot.
I'm always looking for ghosts.
So you can't actually buy newer infrared cameras unless you would want to pay $700-$800, so I started making them. Disassemble Sony camera, change the low pass filter out, put a clear piece of glass in, the thing sees full spectrum. It'll see everything from the, I don't know if it sees ultraviolet, but
it does.
It's
it's ultraviolet to infrared.
Okay, with daytime it looks kind of funky, but it's fantastic infrared. Pick up some infrared lights to go along with that, and awesome, great audio recording, great video recording.
Omnidirectional infrared. Where would you get that kind of kit?
Omnidirectional infrared.
Just like.
Oh, no, I just had just spotlight.
Just
a spotlight attached to the camera itself. It just looks in the same direction.
You can actually get some of them where they are full spectrum lights. Like, we have one of those as well, where we'll have actually from ultraviolet all the way down to IR on the single just light bands going across.
Yeah, hoping so, something will reflect.
Yeah, it'll reflect in all types of different light ranges. So now we've actually tried a couple times where we actually blocked out all but the UV just to see what would happen.
That's a, like, I was wondering about that the other day. Why wouldn't
there's been no difference. It's just the IR one is the most commonly used because it's a little bit easier on people's eyes. Because, you know, the UV light is almost like a black
It'll
light.
Burn so your eyes.
It can bother people's eyes.
Now, the reason for infrared vice white light is interference and shadows. Most people think, oh, because you can't see in the dark, so you turn the lights off so you'll see a ghost in the dark. Well, that's all horse shit. What it is different light sources will create different shadows. You'll be sitting in a room, in a house, or somewhere else. Airplane will go by. The lights from the aircraft will create a shadow movement. You'll have the moon creating a shadow. You'll have lights from cars creating shadows. So you have all these different shadows from different directions. It interferes. Someone thinks they see a ghost. You get it on. You get it recorded. It looks like a shadow person sitting there somewhere. And next thing you know, you're on Ghost Hunters. When in reality, all you are is foolish.
There's also the idea with all these other light sources coming. Like, I can look around the room we're in right now with the computer screens right there, with the light fixture, the window behind you. If I was in here with a camera, any one of those could create a glare or a reflection that could be misinterpreted as an orb.
Or, oh my God, orbs.
You know what? Don't laugh at those, because I've actually seen one, and it freaked the hell out of me.
Tell us about your orb.
I see plenty of them.
Oh, jeez.
But okay, I have cats and dust.
So you want to hear my orb story?
Is it a firefly?
No, actually. you've read the website, haven't you? All right, well, you know, I'll tell you orb story on this. And again, I don't know if it's actually a ghost or if it's a UFO. I'm not too sure. This was a summer of 2013 or 2014. Again, I have to read the article. My wife would be able to tell me. But I was at my wife's cottage with her now late uncle, unfortunately. Great man, great scholar. You know, the type of guy you can have on a podcast and he'd talk for like 5 hours straight type of thing. Yeah, like he knew everything, and he knew everything about that area. And we played cards and board games until late in the evening one night. This was the Friday that we first came up to this cottage, and it's about I don't know if you know where Horton is. So like just north of north of Armprior, northwest of Armprior on the Ottawa River, and at about 12:30, you know, wife had gone to bed already, and I'd been talking with her late uncle, and he went to bed, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna have an extra smoke and, you know, just one last glass of scotch before going
There's
to bed.
Your orb.
Oh no! I oh, trust me, I'm Croatian. You don't know how much I can drink. and I step outside, and about 50 feet away at the top of the trees, which is maybe about two stories tall, there are these two birch trees. If I'm standing here at the door, they're at my 2 o'clock, and I, it's completely blackout. It's a new moon, so you can't see any stars. I can't see 20 feet past the deck of the cottage. It's just inky black, and I look at the top of the top of the trees, and there's just this, you know, glowing orb, this orange orb. I got a picture of it up on the website. Check it out at denofloor.com. And the thing was dancing in figure eights, and I watched it for the better part of about half an hour, and I got to be able to take one photo of it. Unfortunately, the picture that I had, like, I basically zoomed in enough that I could get it, and I just basically hidden the washroom with a, you know, 100-year-old shotgun for the better part of around 3.5 hours.
How big was this thing?
I'm going to say about half the size of your head in relative distance.
I have a pretty big head. That's,
well, again, I'm so and again,
football size.
So it was about the size of a grapefruit kind of thing.
I'm gonna say it was about. It looked about the size of a grapefruit, as if a grapefruit were about the same distance as you and me.
Yeah.
Like again, I'm also potentially a third kind contactor. I potentially may
You're
have
a
been
contact survivor.
Contact survivor. Yes, we've got to be PC about
that. That's right.
I may have been abducted by some fucking aliens. How about
awesome.
That? I'm not too sure. I don't want to find out just
you
because.
Feel probe violated. Show me on the doll where the bad men touch.
was the spaceship white with four wheels.
Oh, this has gone downhill. They're whistling Dixie.
Oh, I'm going to get some hate mail over this one.
As long as the banjo didn't come out.
Do not email me at info@denoflore.com with your scathing reviews of this conversation.
Anyways, to get back what you were talking about. One thing you need to remember, our friends at MUFON, whenever we get a UFO case or something like that, we hand it over to our friends at MUFON. They specialize in this. Like, I know Stu Barnes, he's the head of MUFON. I've spoken to him a few times. Ryan Stacey is the head of Ontario for all MUFON investigators. I've spoken to both those gentlemen, as well as the late Bob Mitchell, on a few occasions about cases that have come to us. And something like this, I would pass to them. But the one thing to remember about the Ottawa Valley in this area, not only is it known as a hotbed for alien activity, highest in the province of Ontario, to my knowledge, the area is also known to be very active volcanically. So we get a lot of earthquakes, you know. We don't have volcanoes, but we get a lot of earthquakes and things. There is something, I just had to look it up because I forget the actual name of it, and they're not telling me the name of it. But around earthquake-prone areas, there is seismic phenomena which will create lights similar to this. You see earthquake it a lot lights, around, yeah, earthquake lights is what they call it. That, given the fact that this is the Ottawa Valley, and the time frame you're talking about was 2013, 2014, that was an area time where there were a few seismic events occurring in the region. So it kind of makes me wonder, the night this happened, if, you know, makes me want to look back on the exact date and see if we get seismic results and see if it's possible what you saw was in fact an earthquake light in the sky. Because that would be something that would actually intrigue me to find out for sure.
That's a legitimate orb.
You know, if it does actually end up being like, you know, earthquake lights, and I hid in the washroom with a, you know, ancient shotgun. I didn't even take shells with me. So.
You stopped the earthquake, so.
Well.
We'll go with that.
No, I kind of figured while I was in there that I couldn't actually even swing the thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, this is great. Like, this is the movie Scream level bullshit. Like, if I run upstairs, you know, all I need to do is be able to go upstairs to the alcove and the aliens are going to come get me up there because I've trapped myself when I could have just gone out the front door.
Tinfoil hat.
Yeah, exactly.
There's this picture of that M.H. Shyamalan movie right now with him in the bathroom. Oh, yeah, yeah. The tinfoil.
So, like,
Swing Away?
That
was
the
name of that one.
I can't remember the name of that.
It was
Signs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that would, from what I can understand, one of the theories about Signs was that it was actually not an alien invasion. It was demonic invasion. And the girl was, the young daughter was basically making holy water all over the place. That's why water hurt them. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why she, you know, she saw things, as it were.
There's weight to that. There's
I had heard they used that as inspiration.
Yeah. But there's a school of thought that we aren't actually being visited by extraterrestrials or anything like that, that it is actually intentional demonic manifestation. Kind of, what do you call it? Pretending to be aliens because that's more acceptable to people or some kind of. Anyway, there's a theory of
trickery and deception.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the main tactics that the enemy, the demons, will use, yes.
Now, have you guys ever heard of an author called Dafyad Abhu?
I can't even pronounce that.
Okay,
name is familiar, actually, for some
reason. Do you remember the game Doom?
Yes.
Okay. Back in the mid-90s, he was contracted to write the novelization of the game Doom, which was very different than the games. Actually, that found it was better, like fantastic writing, especially for a teenager. You know, it's like, oh, hey, they're blowing shit up. This is fantastic. They kind of flipped it around the other way, where the aliens who were coming to Earth were using the idea of demons to scare the shit out of the Earthlings because they're thinking, okay, well, the last time we hear it was like, you know, the 14 or 1300s, and everyone believed this stuff, and they came back in like the 2000s. Or, you know, I think it was like 22 or 2300, they were able to go to Mars, you know, like near future in science fiction. And it's like, oh, there's a spacefaring race that doesn't deal with this shit. And we'll just shove a double-barreled shotgun up at, you know, an alien's mouth and pull the trigger type of thing. And that's like an exact opposite of the trope. So I haven't actually heard of it the other way. I may have heard like whisperings of it. But like, where does that idea come from? Because it's, I think it's kind of interesting. Like, well, demons in spaceships?
There are hundreds of theories out there about everything. There are people that would say that aliens are manifesting as ghosts, even, to communicate with us. Like, I've heard people say that there are that aliens are able to speak to humans telepathically. You know, things like that. There are so many theories out there about what paranormal events are and where they come from. It's unreal. But I mean, some of these the ones that we're talking about right now, the aliens and things like that, they're a little bit further out than personally I like to look at, because there's a lot more assumption involved. And every time, as soon as you start adding assumption into the mix, you're starting to get away from being into as scientific as you can be in this field. You're starting to go into, now we're just throwing out guesses.
Hence why you were shaking your head going, please don't go there. Please don't go there.
Yes.
When we start talking about aliens, that's a little further afield than I'm willing to go.
I'm not going
to
say it's aliens.
Well, we hit on everything with this show, gentlemen. We've even hit on pop culture in this show. So
we like pop culture.
Oh, that's, well, fantastic.
I do believe the Kardashians are aliens.
I don't. I think they're demons.
So we're both on the same page.
I think we're both on the same page.
No, only if you stick around a Dabo table with them, I think.
Oh, good God.
You realize now we're probably getting sued by the Kardashians.
Very likely. Well, they did lose.
Oh, Kardashians. Oh, I thought you said Cardassians.
I thought it was a brand of sweater. Kardashian sweater? But that's not right.
And Alex is just like, what happened?
I'm at a loss. This is where the lawyers get involved.
He's just sitting there going, I got the notes stick right out the window. speaking of demons, we'll go on to that, because we've been talking about ghosts and talking about gear for a little bit. How would the gear that you, and I'm going to try and segue between the two things, watch me work my magic, boys. How would the gear that you would deal with or have worked with, how was that factor into the paranormal when dealing with demons taking over, like, let's say some small little kid and having them walk backwards down the stairs?
You don't fuck with that. Not with equipment. No, that's where you need an exorcist.
Yeah. Okay.
At that point, it's beyond equipment. The equipment we use, we basically use it to go in and try to ascertain, is there something paranormal here, and capture evidence of it. When you have people that are in the throes of demonic possession, infestation, or oppression, you're into a whole new level. Like, that is something totally different than what Daryl has seen. He hasn't been with us that long. We do deal in those cases, and we have had a few of them. None within the last couple of years, though. But no, when you're in those situations, it's a whole different ballgame completely. The equipment at that point goes out the window, and we have to call in, we have to bring in a special group of our team that actually handles these types of things.
Okay, well, what would have been like an interesting case you can tell me without breaking any confidentiality things that came about that didn't end up being like, you know, a kid going through puberty?
Well, we had one where it was definitely not a kid in puberty. It was a much older person. And basically what was happening with them is they were losing time. We were over there and we actually caught a recording. We just had the recorder out just to see if, you know, we could catch anything. We had the recorder out, and we had this person with no knowledge of them. They had no knowledge this recorder was even in the room, because it was left in somebody's jacket when they left the room. And you can hear clearly two voices coming out of this single person. Like, the person was crying, speaking, and saying, you know, why are you doing this to me? Next thing you know, 2 seconds later, and I'm sorry, actors may be able to do this. These people were not actors. To be able to go from crying tears to literally a deep, angry voice that sounded nothing like them was something that caught our attention right away.
Now, when does something like that lead more towards, split personality? And how is, like, a split personality, I know it's not called that anymore, but dealing with split personality disorders, how would something like that be equated to, let's say, demonic possession? Thank you very much for reminding me of that word, by the way. And is that something that could be one and the same, just talked about in different, the same thing with two names out of both sides of the mouth, as it were?
You're absolutely right there. There are parapsychologists that will say demonic possession is brought about solely because of psychological issues, and it's mixed with theological belief, and that's where it comes from. However, the church and many of us who have been out there and seen it, we know there is a little more to it. Yes, these things do exist. I'm not going to sit here and say every single mental illness is something demonic. There is mental illness. And the first thing when we suspect something like that, which is what happened in that case, we refer them to take it to their doctor, speak to their doctor, tell them what's going on without holding back. Because 90% of the time, people are afraid that they're going to be called crazy or, you know, made fun of, or that the doctor's just going to roll his eyes and think, okay, we're going to lock you away in a loony bin. No, 90% of the time, the doctor is going to look at this and they're going to run psychological and neurological tests, which in one case saved a woman's life. She was losing time, which is another sign of the demonic. She was having all kinds of weird things, remembering languages that she had never spoken, things like that. Those are other signs of supposed signs of the demonic. Now, when she saw her doctor found a large brain hemorrhage on the left side of her brain, which was causing all these effects. So she was admitted to hospital immediately, and she survived because of it. Now that being kept in mind is why before we even consider anything paranormal, you have to look at the natural. And especially in the realm of possible demonic or anything like that, you have to get doctors involved, and people have to go to them and tell the truth.
Right away, you'd be doing a multi-tier approach.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's the best course of action.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, if we would have brought in a priest or other clergyman or whatever to that woman's house, she likely would have died.
Yeah.
We have medical sciences for very good reason, and you need to exhaust all those avenues before leaping into
the supernatural.
Matters of faith. That's sort of like the classic painful suspense thing when you're looking at like the movies. This is like, okay, you know, we're going to bring them, you know, this child to the doctors, and they obviously don't find anything, and sort of the slow process of going through it step by step versus getting multiple professionals or a team to look at somebody that might have dementia or
that's always
you get all the help you can right away.
But that's always got to be the first step. They've always got to go through that, and when the doctors can't find anything, then we can possibly consider moving into, okay, we have something more supernatural going on, which would be something involving the demonic. But even still, during that process, when we're looking at this as a possible demonic, we are still keeping in touch and keeping them in contact with their doctor. Just in case this is something, you know, doctors make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. There's all kinds of things that we don't even know about from the human mind and all. So we always have to keep them in touch with their doctor to make sure. There are members of our team which are actually medically trained. We have nurses on our team that when we're on site, we are doing this. We had one exorcism a few years ago. It took place not far from here. And that night, we actually had the person strapped up to heart monitors and things like that just to monitor their health to make sure that they were okay while this was happening.
Yeah, that requires a special sort of bravery to look at those things. Just the other day on Facebook, someone had posted some new interviews with Charles Manson. And it's something very different to talk to somebody who's may actually be mentally deranged, or they've got dementia, or they're psychotic. The really interesting, weird, uncomfortable thing to look at that firsthand.
That's a perspective.
That requires a lot of bravery.
If you think about it logically, this stuff exists whether you want to admit it or not. Whether or not you want to face it and look at it or not, it's going to be there. If it's going to affect your life, it's going to affect your life. So,
it's all about how you how you choose to deal with it and how you recognize it. I mean, there's a lot of training that goes involved when you're looking into dealing with the demonic and things like that. And one of the things is being able to identify somewhat the difference between someone that is simply mentally deranged and someone that is possibly under demonic oppression.
Well, that's also one of the things that I have to wonder about is if somebody is speaking different languages they've never known before and they're speaking them fluently or at least apparently fluently, and it comes down to, you know, potentially, let's say, a neurological or a physical symptom, where are they still learning that language from? Is this something that is
coming
from...
There was a case years ago. I don't remember the little girl's name, but they believed her to be demonically possessed. She started speaking in a language of her ancestors. Somewhere, I think it was Ukrainian, something along those lines. But she was third generation removed. This is a woman in her 90s. She had never been to the country. She knew no one from there that spoke it. But she began speaking it, and they began to think she was possessed by the devil, by a demon or something like that.
Is someone channeling, or are they possessed, and where do those two meet or disconnect?
What ended up happening was the doctors found a neurological cause, and it activated certain neuro cells in her brain that had been dormant for, you know, we only use 10% of our brain, right? So it activated these parts of her brain that had been dormant forever, and she remembered her great-grandfather speaking in this language when she was, I believe he was alive until she was probably, I want to say a year, but it's been a while since I've read the story. I just remember that one sticking out of my mind when you mentioned the different languages. But they did find that this, she did have a connection to someone, but it was back when she was so young that it wasn't something that came out until this neurological disease was actually discovered in her brain.
How the neurology of memory works is still, I believe, quite the mystery. So the notion that you might have some sort of hereditary memory, obviously, and how instinct works, it's an interesting area.
There's theory now that memory is not only stored in our brain. I mean, disregarding
our organs,
neurons in your heart, and
disregarding the fact that our minds are so incredibly sophisticated that we can't even imagine what we're capable of neurologically that way. But just to think that the way we perceive memory is still something that's mostly unknown to us. So you get into something like someone being able to recite a different language. They may have seen it on TV when they were in the crib, and so through some strange twist of fate or neurological condition or physical abnormality, they're able to recall and essentially repeat that.
We know there's legit cases of people with, you know, photographic memory and people that can do like algorithm calculus in their heads. Mm-hmm. And there's some pretty incredible stuff the brain can do.
I can't even say algorithm calculus. Yeah.
That's a word.
Yeah. I can't even say that one.
One of the theories that I've heard so far, and this is the one that I love the most, is that it's not just stored within our organs, but actually within our DNA, that we can remember things. You know, whether it's kind of an instinct or, you know, certain traumatic experiences can get so ingrained within our own bodies that it's passed on to generations later. Like, why are people afraid of snakes?
Trauma, yeah.
Why was there and especially like around the time of the last ice age, and I know I'm probably going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but the last ice age ended, and some people theorize that the Earth was hit by a massive comet. That is now the Taurid meteor stream, and essentially, like, you know, we're talking kilometer size comet that smacked into the North American ice sheet, and that's why we can't actually find we can't find either hair of it, because at that point it was under several miles of ice. But the time in that cataclysm basically burned most of the world. North America was basically wiped out. That's why we lost most of the larger mammals. But that fear of comets and that idea of cometary impacts has basically been like passed down a lot of the times through symbolism of snakes, believe it or not. Snakes, dragons, that type of it's a metaphor for cometary impact. So, you know, that type of imprint of a traumatic experience on not just one individual, you know, if we're talking about somebody who's transplanted a heart from one person who died to another, and then all of a sudden that person, you know, can learn how to play a piano like they did. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, on an entire species. Is this something that you guys have looked into as far as researching, like, back history? Like, have you looked into not just somebody's history, but their overall, you gotta say, like,
background.
Yeah, basically, like their cultural background.
We do a bit of background on the individuals that contact us, just to give us an idea, you know, their beliefs, what their, you know, if there is anything like that. But we don't go quite that far back.
That's a pretty broad sociological pattern you're looking for, but that's a really interesting notion, Chris.
Yeah,
thank you.
No, a lot of times, what we would look for when a client comes to us, we would, you know, Google their social media, Google their name, just see if anything comes up of interest that we need to know about. Like, if we had a client a few months ago that when we went onto their social media site, everything they had was about ghost hunting shows, ghost movies, all these stories, haunted books, new stuff like that. And right there, we knew what we were dealing with was someone who may not be actually experiencing the paranormal, but that wants to. You see, we will do a little background like that. That's why it's called parapsychology. We have to work as much on the client as we do on what's going on, especially in situations where we don't find anything.
Step one, burn your Stephen King books.
Yeah.
I wouldn't burn them, but I mean, I see where you're going with it.
Yeah.
A lot of the times what we'll do in that situation is we'll actually talk to them and try to, you know, encourage them to get some sort of professional counseling to get them to realize, you know, these things are fantasy, they're not real. And the more you see it, the more you look for it, the more you'll find it.
Yeah. Is that person looking for attention? Is a question you have to ask.
That's a totally different one, but we have had a few of those.
It's one of the sad realities of the field is there is a fair amount of that. You'll see people that they want something interesting and they want something exotic and they want something spectacular to happen in their life.
Or they just want these people that are coming to them interested in talking to
them. They want company. They're lonely. They're bored.
Everybody wants their beliefs legitimized.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they see the TV shows and it becomes reality for them. And it's sad, but it's true.
Somebody's got to step in and help them change the channel. Turn
off the TV.
There's an interesting...
a lot of those cases, we'll actually tell them, you know, it's time, maybe you should speak to someone, you know, a counselor, priest, someone who can give you more counseling. Like, we're not psychologists. We're not trained in that type of thing.
Yeah.
When we get to this situation, we do our best to encourage these people to actually go and speak to someone who has that kind of training that can help them.
There's an interesting comment McKenna makes, to quote him, that says if someone's like psychologically, you know, if they're having a bad trip or, you know, if they're not having a bad trip, they're just in a really bad psychological space. One of the classic sort of shamanistic modalities to use is to have them sing. So like those, you know, when those tribes would dance and around the campfires and stuff like that, and they all sing together. So if your mental space is in the meat locker and you're freaking out, one of the best things you can possibly do to change the channel is to sing a song.
You don't want to hear me singing.
Sort of a weird...
Ever. It's not very... It's not
hopefully pretty. You never need to do that.
We're social
If you're ever in a really bad headspace, then you can...
Well, it does... They do, like they say, music hath charms to soothe the savage beast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Singing can calm certain people.
And we are social beasts. I mean, I don't mean Facebook social. Human beings are meant to... be together in groups, face to face, in with family, friends, and things like that. Our modern society has discouraged and destroyed that whole paradigm where most of us sit alone in rooms by ourselves on Facebook or watching TV and stuff, and that has psychological implications.
All of society is at arm's reach from each other.
Exactly, yeah. At arm's reach, but too far away to touch.
Yeah.
People start to get down like that, the best thing for them to do is go out and be with people instead of maybe watching Ghost Hunters and they're recording EVPs in their bathrooms.
You see, it goes back. When you have people that are watching these shows all the time, it goes back. I'm not saying that they don't have activity, because we have had some where there was genuine activity occurring in the places we were at. But the Bader-Meinhof effect, basically... if you know what that is, it's the theory, you know how you buy a new car,
mm-hmm.
say, we'll say like a Mazda Miata.
Suddenly every car I see is the same car.
Every time you see one, you're like, you know, oh, I bought this. You never see these on the road. You drive down the road. Oh, look, there's one. Now it's in your head. Now you're picking them out. So when you watch all these shows constantly and you start thinking you're seeing things and you start having these experiences, there's a good chance it's not because of the shows or it's not because of that. It's because you've seen this and now your brain, which is hardwired to make sense of what it's the signals it's receiving from your eyes, your ears. It's translating it into it's a ghost. Well, we see that quite a bit. And again, you know, it's not saying that there isn't something there, because we have had cases where, yeah, there was stuff there. But we always tend to look for how many people have seen this. Was it only one, or have there been more?
Now, speaking of seeing ghosts, from your own experience, and you mostly just document to confirm whether it's actually there. And what happens once you actually find something? Do you break out the proton packs? You know, don't cross the streams, or do you hand them off to somebody else?
I have mine in my car.
Oh, shit, man. Let's go get it. Let's fire that thing up.
Is that where Play-Doh comes into the picture?
In some cases. Generally, when we actually find, okay, there is something going on, at that point, it becomes, what do we need to do to remove it? You know, or do we even need to? Because a lot of times, we've had some cases where it's just a kindly old... I think we had one case we can't really talk about. Was the location asked for privacy. But we did have another couple where there was actually individual, they were a crisis apparition. What that is it's somebody has passed away and they appear to family members to basically tell them, you know, I'm okay, everything's good, I moved on, just to try to comfort them. You used to hear about it a lot where people would get a phone call from a dying relative. And then when they hang up, they find out their relative died an hour ago. It was a hospital calling the second one. You know, that's what we would consider a crisis apparition or a crisis event, honestly. With a
forerunner.
Yeah. But in those situations, you know, there's nothing much we can do. In other situations where it's an entity that is attached to the land because, say, they've been there, you know, it was a place that they loved in life. In death, they're just tied to it. Why their spirit came back to it, nobody knows, but that's where they chose to spend their eternity. And that is, you know, where they are. We can't really force them out. A lot of times it's convincing the people how to, you know, just live with the entity that's there.
If an entity were in my house, and I've never lived with one personally, I'm hoping it's one of those ones that, like, does the laundry for me and, like, does my dishes, and I just come home and everything's clean. You know, that would be fantastic.
I don't think it'll go to that point.
When we're talking about mental health.
Yeah. That's the scotch.
No,
but when you have people that are living with these entities, a lot of times what they'll have is they'll have bangs, they'll have knocks, they'll have objects moving, disappearing. We had one, the woman's grandmother's brooch kept being taken. So they were thinking it was something evil coming after them, when in fact we believe it may have actually been a family member, possibly the grandmother, who just was looking after the family, looking out for them. And why was she picking up the brooch and moving it? It was her trying to let them know, hey, I'm here. It's me. Don't be afraid.
Or one of those, like, I will never, like, this was not in the will. I'm taking this with me. What kind of different apparitions are there? Like, again, I know that you've mentioned the crisis apparition. I know that you mentioned a couple more. Let's go through the gamut, just because I'm interested to know that there's more than just one type of ghost.
Well, when we look at it, an apparition is basically anything we can see with our eyes. If a spirit was to manifest and we see, like, you know, a torso, something like that, that's an apparition. When we say crisis apparition, it defines the type. Like I said, somebody's grandmother dies, they get a call from the hospital, but they've just hung up the phone with their grandmother, but the hospital tells them, no, she died an hour ago. You know, that's what we would consider a crisis apparition, just because it's a one-time event, it happens then and there, and you know, you never hear more of it. Other than that, there are apparitions that would be considered haunting by parapsychology, yeah. Residual haunting by the rest of our world. And in residual hauntings, they are basically like a tape recorder playing itself over and over. The best example of that would be Gettysburg, the battlefields of Gettysburg. It's one of the most well-known documented haunted locations in the United States. People often, in certain areas of the battlefield where the fighting was bloodiest, report apparitions of soldiers marching to battle. You know, they'll have sounds that sound like battles happening. These things, they don't interact with people, and they just happen nonstop. All the time. It's like a recording caught in a loop. So that would be a residual. From there, you would have your intelligent, which would be like a woman who loved a church. And yeah, that would be a good one right there. The Ottawa Little Theater. Mm. Maggie. the spirit of Maggie that supposedly haunts the Ottawa Little Theater. She's regularly seen interacting with people, where she will be in the audience until somebody says something to her. Then you'll see her turn and walk away. Well, that could be considered an intelligent.
And you have human and non-human.
Yeah.
Human would be someone who's died.
Someone who has lived and died.
Yeah, or even in some cases, someone who's still alive and about to die. Mm-hmm. And then you have non-human, which is where you get into other things such as angels, demonic entities, and whatever else the universe may provide for us to...
Yeah, there are different views on that, depending on your own beliefs. Some psychics will tell you there's all things from elementals. Some cultures would say the jinn, which are not demons, but you know, it depends on your own personal beliefs at that point. But either way, the one thing that everyone can agree on those is these types of things, they never were human, they never were alive.
But they're still just kind of showing up.
They're just, they exist. And that's it.
Floating around on the edge of hyperspace.
Doing their thing.
Yeah. So these are the theories behind where these are. I mean, none of this has ever been proven, obviously, because, well, if it was, we wouldn't be considered pseudoscience.
No.
Now, how do you get rid of a ghost or an apparition besides the standard, you know, like, is it holy water? Do you bring in a Ouija board? Do you just, like,
it
smoke a bunch
on the
of
individual.
Incense? And
no Ouija
really?
Board.
Yeah, no Ouija board is bad.
Don't ever touch a Ouija board.
Yeah, though, just stay away from those. Really?
You know they sell them at like the Toys R Us.
They absolutely do.
Yes, they do.
And lesser.
Doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Really?
They sell all kinds of things that'll kill you.
Lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram.
Ah, there we go. Throw down some salt.
Holy water. You make that witch's
cauldron.
They
sell chemical sets at Toys R Us too.
They do.
You want to give them to somebody who doesn't know what they're doing with the chemicals?
It's like sticking your hand in an Easy Bake oven. The result's going to be pretty similar.
Well, you know, they used to, like, put uranium and plutonium with toys back in the 50s, so I can understand that.
Ouija board.
Okay, well, but before we go on with that, I want to hear why you think a Ouija board is so bad and what experience you may have had.
I've had a creepy one with
Ouija
board.
I've had a couple of experiences with Ouija boards.
I've never had an experience with a Ouija board, but I've had plenty of clients who did.
I've had,
and that's enough for me.
Two, one of them is really kind of creepy, and the other one is just bizarre and ridiculous. First one, teenager, down in Halifax, the East Coast. A couple of us, I think we're about 14 years old, got our hands on a Ouija board and started playing with this thing. I think there was four of us. And my friend, her mother, was in the house as well. And the Ouija board starts spelling out just bizarre things, things that we didn't understand. We're writing it down, we're reading it out. And to us, it was gibberish. But this girl's mother starts crying. I'm like, what's going on? I said, that's German. That's and it was our sister's name who died God knows how long ago and this and that. So we stopped using that Ouija board at that moment. I mean, this is one of those benign things, but a Ouija board is, in my opinion, from my experience talking to other people, it's never benign. If it's someone you think that you know, it's not someone you know. It's someone acting like someone you know so that they can...
Never trust it.
...get into your life. That's what a Ouija board does. Second thing with a Ouija board, this is silly and it could be completely coincidence. First car I ever bought, little Volkswagen, 1982 Volkswagen, I think it was. 87 Volkswagen Golf. Cool little car, got it for $700. Found out later why I got it for $700, because it looks spotless. So I had this thing about a week. I'm driving it around. No problems with it. Works perfectly. Everything's great. I go to clean it out one weekend, and underneath where the spare tire is, I find a Ouija board, which I thought was particularly odd. I took the Ouija board out. The car never started again. Sold the car to someone else who knew a lot about cars. They changed some parts. Couldn't get the car to run. They sold it to someone else. Couldn't get the car to run. I kind of followed it a little bit after that out of curiosity. I guess it went to an auto mechanic and they replaced pretty much half the engine and the car never ran again. It ended up in a junkyard, which I found just basically amusing. I mean, it could be coincidence, but it makes for a cool story about Ouija boards.
It's like, seem to have a thing with German,
German things.
German Ouija boards.
Ouija boards in German. I never put that together. Scheiße.
I had one. I was when we were kids, and I was over at our parents' friend's house or something like that, and their family had one in the basement. The kids were bored, adults upstairs or something, so they started. The girl that was there started playing around with it, and we're all just sitting there. And then across the room, there's one of those little like wind up marionette style doll things, and
oh, they're it started, creepy.
And that not for very long, like 3-4 seconds, it started going on its own, and nobody was anywhere near it. So either she had done it intentionally to mess with us, or but yeah, that I was like, oh, we're done. I'm going upstairs.
We've all seen The Exorcist, right?
Yeah.
It starts with a Ouija board.
Well, I've never played around with one myself, just because, again, I mentioned this like almost every second episode at this point. I come from a very long line of tarot card readers and mystics and psychics. My mother is one of those ones who can do tarot cards and, you know, read tea leaves, and she's had out-of-body experiences, like, you know, been at another end of the room while being at another end of the room and basically saw the room from two different points at the same time. She'd been up for like 48 hours at that point, dealing with, you know, the death of my grandmother, her mother, who was even more psychically in tuned than she was. My mother tells me a story of, and I think I might have mentioned this before, it wasn't done through us, but it was actually through the husband of a friend of the family. And he was, before he got married, he was in seminary, because he was training to be a priest at the time. And some guys at the seminary basically were playing around with a Ouija board, and they released some type of demonic power. And again, I don't know if this is just told to me to basically say, oh, let's scare the shit out of the, you know, the 10-year-old or what have you. But this actually came from my mother, who told me this, not him directly. So I think that she would not lie to me. Apparently, they released some demon. And this thing was pissed off as all hell, and was like flipping tables and chairs around, and apparently took one of those like wood oak tables and basically slammed it into like the top of, you know, if we're talking a seminary, we're talking 30-40 foot ceilings, and basically threw this thing halfway up a wall and embedded it into a wall. Pretty much when I heard that, I never touched it. I'm just like, I'm staying the hell away from this shit. But yeah, I can understand that. But
No, but I mean, personally, I would never touch them, because I've had a lot of clients, and I can't even tell you how many times when we've encountered something that was led us to be possibly demonic, or some of our more serious paranormal cases, where the first words that they came to us with were, well, we were playing with a Ouija board. That's happened so many times, it's baffling. And that's why, you know, for me, I won't touch them. But I do know there are plenty out there that it's the other way. They consider it a tool, just like tarot cards, things like that. And, you know, it boils down to personal belief. And I mean, you know, same thing when you're playing, when you have a gun. You can sit and play Russian roulette with a gun all you want. Doesn't mean it's going to go off. It's always that one time where something can happen.
Now, what about tarot cards? Well, like, what is your general opinion on that? Is it along the same lines of Ouija boards, or is it like a tool?
Personally, I avoid all, I myself personally avoid those, just because that's my own beliefs. But I do have, we have friends, people we work with, they work with them regularly. Like Helen is our occult specialist, Helen Arts of the Witch Hollow. She works with these regularly, tarot, Ouija, all those things. She has no problems with them. She finds no reason why they're evil. She knows we don't like them, and she knows not to bring them when she's working with us. But at the same time, even she admits, you know, if you don't know what you're doing and you're not trained in these things, you're not experienced with them, it's a very bad idea.
It's like giving a child a gun.
Yeah.
It doesn't often end well.
Or giving a politician a lot of money.
That's correct.
It's not going to go very well.
No. Like a senator with an expense account.
Cold can of pays. God damn it. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Yeah, no, I'll be fine with that. I don't think I'm going to get any hate mail on that one. most of our listeners are along the lines of government. Good? No, not really. So I'm okay. You know, I'm on the fence. I don't care. It's like, yeah, you know what? Whatever your belief is, if you want to listen, fine. So I'll make those jokes. Then again, you have to be Canadian to kind of understand that one anyway. So,
I don't know if you've seen who's running on the other side. I think they figured it out real quick. They figured it out real quick.
I think I saw that on a South Park episode once.
So, who, like, we've, and again, it was Helena, your
Helen, yes.
Helen, your occult specialist. Who are some of the other members of the team? Again, I might have been out of the room when that was going on, but.
Well, we have our case manager, Julia. Whenever we get a client contact us, she's the first one to speak to them from the team. She'll run them through a questionnaire we have, and we get a little bit of background information, which is going on. It gives us a better sense of who we're talking to, what their state of mind is, and what the actual activity they're experiencing is. And it helps us look for any patterns and just gives us an overall idea of what we could be walking into potentially, or just what we're looking at. She looks after that. There's also another new addition is Alex. He is our documentarian, as well as he is doing, as a documentarian, he does a bit of a research. He documents a lot of what we do, and he's also helping with the case management as well. He's looking at getting locations, like contacting like places like the Bytown Museum, things like that, just to, so we can get into investigate these places, have a little bit better. Just another one to help out Julia with the caseload. We also have Chris. He's our head of research. As it says, he's out with us on a lot of the cases in the field investigating. He's also, whenever we're going in, he's doing all kinds of research to find out background about locations, about the place, about the people, about anything he can, basically. We have Joe, Jeff. There are a couple of our investigators. They come out with us regularly. These are all people that they do all different things. We're all from all walks of life. Like Jeff is he works as in restaurants, in the restaurant industry. Joe, I believe she works in retail. We have Craig. He's our head of psychic research. He's a psychic himself, so he gets his impressions in the place. Generally, he'll go in, he'll get his impressions. We don't tell him where we're going, what's going on, anything. He just walks in, goes around, gives us what he's feeling, writes it all down. And then we do the investigation, and at the end, I'll look at what he's written down, and I'll compare it to what our research was able to find and what the clients were actually talking about to see if we have any correlation from it. But none of what he says is ever considered evidence unless we get something concrete to back it up.
It's kind of like with, you know, the old Star Trek, The Next Generation, with Diana Troi going, it's like, well, you know, like, Captain, I think I sense some hostility. You know, it's kind of along the cable. If they're firing at you, then you can actually correlate that two together instead of just going, well, exactly. The feeling is nice, but, you know, you need people to document it. Now,
exactly. But again, his abilities are just another tool. If he's in a room and he says, I think something's about to happen, you know, in this room, even if it's not a room we've been told is a hotspot that the family has seen a lot of activity in, power to you. We'll send him with a camera and a recorder and tell him, you know, go ahead. Do your thing, see what happens. We've actually had quite a few of those where he's caught some interesting stuff just going off on his own like that on a tangent. But he comes back with EVPs, all kinds of things from some locations we've been.
Take him to buy scratch and win tickets, please. Just, you know.
It doesn't work like that.
Oh, man.
I tried. Trust me, he's been trying for a while, too. It doesn't work.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, all the lottery, trust me. We've been down that road.
how do people get in touch with you? Like, what is the... you know, where do they learn more about you?
Easiest way, we are currently updating the website, but ottawaparanormal.com, that is the best way to reach us. We can be contacted through there. There's also links to all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. So, yeah, it's all on the website.
Fantastic. Alex, is there anything that, any pressing questions or subjects you want to bring up? You're sitting behind me, so I can't see your notebook.
No, I have the notebook.
That way long ago.
We covered a fair bit.
Well, gentlemen, I'm gonna say it's pretty much close to about the top of the hour as far as we're concerned. Daryl, John, again, thank you very much for coming out to this stormy evening in Ottawa to come talk to us here at the Den of Lore. You're welcome back pretty well at any time. Just make sure you give me a little bit of, you know, forewarning so I can get some chairs up here. And, you know, kind of keep the dog out, the pets out. I'm surprised the cats actually stayed out tonight. That was actually quite impressive. Usually there'd be one sitting on your lap and one sitting on yours.
Oh.
So they just want to see what's going on. But again, thank you very much for taking the time and for chatting with us and having a very good show. It's a lot of fun. And we'll see about doing something soon. The last question I had for you guys is the next time you go out on, a major... We want to be able to do an excursion and kind of report on it with the show, and we would love to be able to come out with you guys. Seriously. Mm-hmm. This is for shits and giggles. I'm actually very interested in this stuff. My family's been very interested in this stuff, and I would love to be able to see what you guys do firsthand.
I definitely think we can work something out for in the new year. I know we usually around the mid to end of November, we actually take a break for the Christmas holidays just to... We're going year-round, so we let our guys just have a few weeks with the family and all. But, definitely when we get started up again in the new year, we can look to set something up.
Fantastic. Alex, you in for that?
Sounds like fun.
All right. Well, get your singlet on, and we'll have a good time.
Hopefully you don't need that.
Oh, I'm going to have to style my hair in, that twirl in the front just to just to kind of get...
Oh, no. No.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, I'd like to thank you very much for listening in. You can check it. It is Thursday, the 20th of October. You'll be able to get this show within the next 24 hours from our website at denoflore.com. Please do me a favor, like the video, subscribe to the channel, and send me some mail. I want to know what you think of the show. I want to hear about some of your experiences. Give me an idea of what you like, what you want to hear, guests you want to have on the show. And even if you just want to say hi and say how much you love to hear Alex's voice, because, I could listen to that man, read the phone book at this point. So have yourselves a wonderful evening, and I will see you next week when we have Ankit Verma on the show, and we're going to be talking movies, popular culture, and pretty well the... insanity that is millennials in 2016.
I think we touched on that.
Yeah, okay, I was actually born. Well, guys, I was born at the beginning of that. I'm like, that's kind of sad to say. It's like shit. I remember social media. I was one of the first people to use social media, to be able to advertise events.
I remember the Commodore 64.
So do I. Never actually programmed on it. Never used it.
I still have one working.
Do you? Yeah. I remember when it came out.
My dad reprogrammed it so at the end it would be symbols.
Oh, that's cool. Play.
So the dual digit, it still works in the original system.
Oh my lord!
Wingdings or something.
Yeah. The asterisk symbol, the question mark, things like that. It would change to that, and that would become the 2000 in place of.
Oh, or if you've got Oregon Trail, or like Wizardry 1 or 2.
Oh my! That's the original Mac, isn't it?
Old school. I grew up on Nintendo. I didn't have a computer until I was 16.
Nintendo
unfortunately,
rocks. I have a Nintendo.
There's a Super Nintendo and an N64 in a bag above your head. I've been trying to. Oh well, yeah. So, well, anyway.
We digress.
Now that we're done dating ourselves.
Now that I digress, thank you all for listening, and we will catch you there next week. Have yourselves a good night, and so long.